now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the football podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti. Before we begin, do not forget, you can catch the highlights from every single Premier League game before anybody else, except I assume for those who are actually in the ground, simply by downloading The Times app to your smartphone. This week, I am delighted and excited to be joined by Alison Rudd and Julien Laurens in the studio and down the line from the lovely London borough of Mortlake, we have Matt Dickinson.
Navas now. There's Aguero. Oh, yes, that puts the seal on it. 4-2. And Sergio Aguero's hat-trick sends City through to round five.
Watford and City now eight. So you're Pellegrini, you decide, all right, it's Watford away, I have a big squad, my reserves are highly paid internationals, all that jazz, and then they go out there and they get spanked and they're 2-0 down at halftime. Pellegrini's fault, or is it just that it's actually difficult if you're a Lescott or a Richards or a Rodwell and you never play, you get thrown in there and you stink it up?
It's always a manager's fault to a small degree, I think, to some degree when the team starts as half asleep as they clearly did. I mean, the fact is it was a pretty strong team. I mean, enough big players in there that you wouldn't, I was listening on the radio and you sort of thought, blimey, what's going on? But I mean, he had, you know, Yaya Toure playing, Navas, Aguero, you know,
Kolarov.
So there's, you know, it's not as if you're, he sent out the kids. Clearly they were lax, simple as that. And I think Pellegrini said it himself, didn't he? He said, you can't play football jogging. And I guess for a team that's chasing four trophies, you're going to have spells where concentration wavers and it's up to the manager to get on top of it. And the fact is, you look at that defensive line, it's certainly not City's strongest. So a team that went there with a bit of courage managed to just expose the complacency.
Okay, Alison. So, Dicko talked about the defensive line right there. The center backs, you have Kompany, who since the start of the 2012-13 season has missed more than a third of City's Premier League starts. You have Matija Nastasic, who we love but because we're pretentious, me and Rory, but frankly is still just 20 years old, has also had injuries. Beyond that, you get into Martin De Michelis, who was deemed too slow by Bayern and is somewhat clunky, although he's done relatively well. You have Lescott, who's out of contract in the summer, and clearly the club don't really rate him enough to have offered him a new contract. You have Dedrick Boyata, who's 23 years old, has been there forever and never plays. You can play Javi Garcia at center half. He's listed at 6'1". I'd be surprised if he really is more than 6 feet tall, and he's also not a center half, clearly.
You can play Richards.
You can play Micah Richards, who's played, like, what, two more games for City than you have, Julien, in the last couple of years? I mean, so he's got a lot of options, all of them bad. Jack Rodwell, who's always injured and hasn't really played much center half. Yaya Toure, then you create a hole in midfield. Is this kind of like the one thing they sort of overlooked, that maybe they should get another body in there?
They have been over-reliant on Kompany. What, Kompany's one of those players, I think, that when he's in the lineup, he makes everyone else around him just look 10% better than they actually are. And if he's arrested or injured, I can't think of a game where City have really looked great, because they do sort of wobble a bit at the back without him. The whole Pantilimon heart experiment, I think that backfired slightly, because I don't really think Pantilimon is in Joe Hart's class.
But has it made Joe Hart better? that was the whole point of the experiment.
Oh, it doesn't seem to have done him any harm. I don't think Joe Hart was that bad to need to be woken up in that way, to be quite honest. But it hasn't backfired, and Joe Hart looks fine when he plays. But I just think bringing in Pantilimon, and what tends to happen is now that he's bringing in Pantilimon for cup games, and so the side is slightly weaker. Now, I know Matt said if you look at the side, you can really list some really top names, but it's sort of listing a bit. It looks great going forward. It's almost impossible for City to put someone out that isn't a big name and reliable going forward and dangerous going forward. But I sometimes think maybe if you're going to make changes and prove that you've got the squad that can win four trophies, you need to sew it together differently so that you're resting just occasionally the odd player at the back and then the odd player at front, rather than making it a back line that's a bit, doesn't know each other that well, hasn't played that often, has issues with confidence because they know they're only playing because it's the FA Cup and they think they're supposed to go through easily. It's a top-heavy team, and that doesn't always gel well. I mean, it did in the end, because, yes, your fantastic attacking players get you out because City always score more goals. And I can't think of anyone in the country who at half-time didn't say, that sounds like a lovely story, but City are going to win 5-3 or 6-2 or something like that.
4-2, of course, it was in the end. Quick word on Aguero, Julian, because I know one of these guys. I'm sure you know them, too, those agent middlemen types. This is a guy from Argentina. Aguero's not his client, but, you know, like those people, he's everybody's friend. You might say he's a professional friend, actually. And he said he was very concerned about Aguero because he said, well, you know, he had the injury layoff and he's coming back and the World Cup's going to be on the back of his mind. And, you know, I think he might just, you know, do just enough to win the title in the Champions League, as if, I guess, the players, City are so good that you could just do just enough. But he's looked really sharp, hasn't he?
He has. And to be, he also had, you know, problems in his private life, obviously, with his family and everything. But the way he came back after that injury, considering how well Dzeko and Negredo played as well, while he was not playing, you know, there was that extra pressure of he had to step up straight away. And he obviously scored a few seconds after his return, the first game he played. I don't think there's an argument that he's the most talented of those three up front with Negredo and Dzeko. I think he's
he's obviously the most talented guy in the team.
The team, but especially, you know, even if Dzeko and Negredo have scored a lot.
Ooh,
as well.
Is he the most talented guy in Manchester?
Ooh.
All right, quick answer,
yes.
Julian.
Yes.
Yes.
Dzeko?
Yeah, go on then. Let's make it a three. I'll tell you one thing. I mean, one thing I just want to say, we're talking about the, you know, combination of the back line and complacency. I mean, the scary thing is that the two players that Pellegrini clearly thought were most responsible for the wretched first half were Richards and Rodwell, who the two players who should have absolutely the most to prove in a game like that.
No,
I mean,
these
are two guys who got, you know, they got a rare chance to say, look, you know, here I am, I'm going to play out my skin, and here I'm going to make myself undroppable. I mean, Richards has got a colossal regard for his own abilities, which seems based on scant evidence, you know, overconfidence beyond belief. And Rodwell has been unlucky with injuries, but, I mean, the fact that he's being hooked at half-time in a game like that, I mean, both those players, I assume, are pretty embarrassed by that.
I mean, just to come back on the defensive line, to be fair, this is a team that is built to attack. It's not a team that is built to defend. They will always be unbalanced because they think too much about attacking. They will always be exposed at the back. Even when Yaya Toure plays with Fernandinho, Yaya Toure doesn't think about defending much, to be honest. He always thinks about going forward. So they will always, even with Kompany and Nastasic, even if they had Piqué and you know, the two best centre-halves in the world, they will still, I think, concede a lot of chances and goals because they're made to attack more than defend.
I find it hilarious that you talk about the best centre-half of the world.
I was looking.
And you don't mention the guy who plays for the team you support.
I know, because then you would say that I was biased anyway on Thiago Silva.
To be fair to Rodwell and Richards, I'm assuming, Dicko, you don't believe Pellegrini's explanation that he actually hooked them because they were just coming back from injury and he wanted to ease them in.
Well, I thought I read that he said he wanted to take off all 11 players at half-time.
<Yeah. laughs> Now, word on Watford. Obviously, last season they go and they come so close, they lose in the playoffs. They've got this model set up with their owner owns Granada and Udinese as well. They have access to a large pool of players. They can't take them all on loan like they did in the past, which seemed to upset a lot of people. Do you see them challenging for playoffs this year? And what do you make of sort of the transition that happens, you know, how do you build from one season to the next when you inevitably are going to change four or five players?
The Championship's not a great division this year. I've seen quite a lot of it recent weeks, watching quite a few games down at Loftus Road for various reasons I won't bore you with, but it's not a great league. So if you're down in 15th in that division, then something's wrong. I mean, I was looking at their results, and you know, you can't judge a guy after eight odd games, but the fact is they're not picking up much. I think it's a couple of wins in about the last 15 or something. There's not been the instant uplift they may have hoped. It's understandable, I guess, Italian owners, the amount of Italian players that they went for an Italian manager, but quite where Watford are going, quite what the whole whether the whole structure, the whole system that they set up there, which was obviously compromised by the restriction on the number of loans they could bring in from Italy, whether this is all going to pay off in the end, this grand experiment run from Italy, is far from yet to see, far from easy to see. So.
Dicko, since I'm feeling pedantic today for a change, I would like to point out that they only had two Italian players in the starting 11. Forestieri and Battocchio are plastic Italians. They're Argentines who have Italian passports for football purposes. And Marco Cassetti, who came on, I believe, is older than you are.
But you know what I mean? It's been a fascinating experiment, but and at times showed a lot of promise, but that promise, if I was a Watford fan, it'd be pretty hard to be seeing the forward momentum at the moment.
Opportunity here for Oscar. David Luiz makes the decoy run. It is Oscar, and it is absolutely brilliant. One out of the top draw and into the top corner for Oscar, the man that Mourinho preferred to Juan Mata, and he's completely vindicated that this season.
On to the other exciting FA Cup game. I'm sorry, can we just take a little side note? I know that if you have a competition like the FA Cup, it's down to the draw, and if Kidderminster Harriers had pulled off a result or Bournemouth, you know, we'd all be excited. I just wonder, in the current football climate, has anybody missed sort of league football this weekend? I do. My hand is up. Nobody?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, see? Yeah. See, even the English people. There you go. Chelsea and Stoke. So, Chelsea, if anybody disagrees with me, please jump in and then we can go and have a debate about it. But Oscar scores a great goal. Stoke were poor. Chelsea could have scored 4 or 5. There wasn't really much else to say about this game. Anybody else have anything else they want to say about this game?
Yeah, why didn't they play Charlie Adam from the start? That was a bit of a...
All right, let's have a debate about Charlie Adam. Dicko, you can answer that question.
I'll let Alison try and, explain the inexplicable.
My kids say to me, why are you obsessed with Charlie Adam, Mum? I really like Charlie Adam. Anyway, if he was in my team and I was Stoke manager, I do not see why you'd bring him on with just a few minutes remaining. And then he looked the classiest player on the Stoke team. Really odd.
You bring him on because he might be able to deliver a set piece or something.
Yeah, he should be on from the start.
But he's slow and not particularly athletic, and they don't want to tire him out in the FA Cup because they feel like they need him in the Premier League. I'm just wearing my Mark Hughes hat. I'm assuming that's why. That sound plausible? No?
It's 1-0. Yeah. It's 1-0. They've already beaten Chelsea once this season. I don't know. A bit more adventure. I mean, this is partly why we all put our hands up, Gab, when you said anyone missed the league. It's because of games like that at the Bridge, where Chelsea won almost without trying very hard, and Stoke looked like they were just joining the dots. And really, if you come out of a game and you're a Premier League manager and you say, more or less what Mark Hughes said was, I'm just sort of happy that we didn't get trounced. I don't. That isn't what football's about. That's not why you pay money to go and watch football. It's have Charlie Adam on the whole time and go for it. Have a laugh. Jeez.
Yeah, I think there's a broader argument to be made about the imbalance between the haves and have-nots in basically every single European league, and how we're close to setting points totals or have set points totals virtually everywhere in the last few years, and that's down to not just Julian's friends at PSG, but also a bunch of other factors like the Champions League market pool and a whole bunch of other issues, which unfortunately we can't get to now because they're not on the running order, but I think are relevant. And at some point,
yes, but everybody knows if you don't try hard enough, you're more likely to get injured. Things are more likely to go wrong if you don't play in your normal game.
I don't think that's true at all. I think that's one of those myths. I think it's one of those myths that people say that, if you don't try hard, you're more likely to get injured. No. if you don't try hard, if you, you know, says who? I don't know if there's any science behind it. I think it's just something football people keep repeating over and over again.
I've seen it.
There you go. A word on, obviously, Nemanja Matic made his debut, and Mohamed Salah is now a Chelsea player, ostensibly replacing Mata. Is that right, Dicko?
Well,
in the rotation, anyway.
We all know the Chelsea system, how it's working, and the fact is, I guess, with selling Mata, Mourinho wanted sort of basically five for three places, isn't it? The line of three behind the striker. I think five for three is probably pretty reasonable there. And Mata wasn't getting the games. Mourinho, word has it that he didn't like the work he was doing off the ball, not doing enough of the hard graft. I mean, it's been fascinating going down to Chelsea, and where we get to sit right near the bench, and you never see Mourinho more animated than when Willian or Hazard runs back 50 yards to make a tackle. It's like Mourinho's dreams have come true by the fact that he's made these, you know, two players sort of buy into that work ethic. And I mean, I've seen Salah, was watching some tapes, looks a high intensity player, obviously got speed. He's a left winger that likes to cut in from the right. You can see him fitting into that line of three and offering something, you know, slightly different maybe from the ones they've already got. So, no, I think if I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be looking forward to seeing him play. He's got good feet. Looks like he could lift a crowd.
Now, obviously, Kevin De Bruyne also, this is weird. It kind of went under the radar, like, because I guess maybe because people don't know who he is because they've hardly seen him in a Chelsea shirt. They managed to sell Kevin De Bruyne for a huge amount of money. What was it? Was it 18 million euros, yeah, something like that?
Something like that. Probably, 20 with bonuses or something. Yeah,
not suggesting he's a bad player, but for a guy who hasn't played for 6 months, you wonder who's running Wolfsburg. In fact, I have an idea, but we can't go there. So, Victor Moses is the other guy who's still a Chelsea player. He's on loan at Liverpool, and he's also not getting much playing time. Should they bring him back so that they can have a nice balanced six guys for three places, and Moses can become the De Bruyne?
Six is a bit too many, isn't it? I think five, like Dico said, is probably the right amount. I mean, Salah has all the pace that Mata, for example, didn't have, and hence the...
Right, but Salah's been playing in Switzerland. I mean, I'm just wondering if you need to...
You saw him in the Champions League, and you clearly saw that he was clearly good enough for much better than just Basel and the Swiss League, which, no offense to the Swiss League, but it's, you know, and that's what I think is, one, is exciting. Two, he can fit perfectly in the team, the way Chelsea are playing under Mourinho. I think he will give everything, like Dico said, to trail back and help his fullback and all of that. And I just think it made perfect sense for them to go for him to replace Matt. Oh,
so, great. So, Alison, do you want Victor Moses to stay at Liverpool, make the deal permanent? Or do you want him banished from your sight?
He hasn't kicked on. I just feel he's become a peripheral figure. I can't see him getting back in the Chelsea team, no. That would just seem ridiculous.
He's a Wigan player.
Yeah, he was great at Wigan.
All right, Dicko, you get the final word on Victor Moses before we move on. I think these people are being a little bit uncharitable towards the guy.
Well, he's not. When he's been given a chance for Chelsea, he's not...
Liverpool.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem. I mean, he's one of those players. Occasionally, just looked a little bit uncertain about sort of, you know, why he's there and who wants him. And maybe that's not that understandable. Surprising, given that the amount of chopping and changing of Chelsea managers is easy for some players to get lost amid it all. I mean, Matic maybe is another example of that. You know, he's a guy who's bought and sold the first time without ever really getting a proper chance. I mean, I guess at that time they had Essien and Lampard as the main two in midfield, and for a young player coming in to not force his way in is no disgrace, I guess, but the fact that they bought him back for 20 odd million euros more than they sold him for is interesting. But I, again, Mourinho tends to get his targets spot on, and I think you can instantly see why he's gone for him and how he can fit into that team. I mean, they're generally a short team. Mourinho likes powerful teams, and he's a big, powerful guy. So, say Mourinho, with Mourinho, you can at least see the sense of all these signings.
All right, enough Mikel, enough FA Cup. Let's move on and talk some Manchester United. So, well, they reached an agreement to sign Juan Mata for £37 million last Wednesday. Juan Mata, who we know isn't particularly quick, it takes him 4 days to actually get to Manchester and be unveiled, and he has to go by helicopter. Actually, no, can you just explain Dicko, because you, and we're going to get into it. You wrote a story today. You have some wonderful information on sort of the anatomy of this deal. Can you explain to me why they couldn't just announce the Mata deal after the New York Stock Exchange closed on Wednesday?
There was a few sort of hitches in it. I mean, the most interesting thing I think that probably came out of some conversations yesterday was the fact that the two clubs never actually communicated directly. Bruce Buck never spoke to Ed Woodward, or Moyes never spoke to Mourinho. I mean, it was all done by intermediaries.
Wait, so Michael Emanalo spoke to nobody?
Michael Emanalo, well, not one representative spoke to another. They use fax machines, don't they, in transfers? That's all they're allowed to, not emails. No, but basically it's all done through lawyers, agents. And that's partly because United just felt that if they sort of engaged in dialogue, that the first thing that would be mentioned would be Rooney. They wanted to keep it at arm's length. And they could do that because Mata had a piece of paper from Chelsea which said that he could leave for €45 million. That bit of paper originally said for anyone except Manchester United. Mata went back and got a verbal agreement that he could actually in the end go anywhere. So there was effectively a sort of buyout clause, and so that enabled it to take place without numerous conversations about how much they were going to pay or how it was going to be done. There was a delay because there was a little squabble over when the medical was going to be done, whether it was going to be done before a fee was agreed, whether it was going to be done after, whether it was going to be done before personal terms had been agreed. There was just a bit of a set to over that, but anyway, it was one of those transfers because of that €45 million that was probably simpler than most, actually.
Julian, now, is this a sign of strength, negotiating a deal of this magnitude and saying, oh, but we don't really... Because you can read this like this. I'm not saying it's the correct way to read it. I am such a rubbish negotiator that if I go into that room with that man, whether or woman in Marina's case, because I'm assuming she actually did a lot of the negotiation, she might upset me and unsettle me by talking about Wayne Rooney. It'll be like a trigger. And then I'm going to lose my cool. And then I might do something silly like sell Wayne Rooney or not sign Mata. And so I'm going to do it all. We're going to do it all at arm's length. We're just going to email each other. And I'm just going to have my army of lawyers here, Morris Watkins' friends, and they're going to go through everything. And we'll do it that way. Can you not read this as a sign of, like, what the hell?
It is a bit weird. Maybe it's the new thing to...
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The transfer, maybe Nasser Al-Khelaifi and PSG will don't have any intention to speak to Mike Ashley, because maybe they wouldn't understand the Cockney accent anyway, but maybe they just think, let's do it without talking as well. Maybe it's the new sort of the new trend. But
no, isn't that Woodward was so rubbish in the summer that maybe he said, like, all right, let me try a different approach. Now, yeah. Let me just stay here in my little box. I mean, seriously. Hey, Dicko, am I wrong here?
Well, I can see, I can see the twist you're putting on it, but I think...
And why would they tell you?
because I think partly they...
I want you to give away whether it's them who told you or Chelsea who told you, but I'm assuming it's true.
I mean, I think people can, shall we say, read between the lines of who's been briefing. I mean, I think the fact is that United, had a reputation as one of the worst clubs for transparency and access. I think, shall we say, a new regime are looking to counter that. They're looking to show to engage more with fans and with media, which generally has to be welcomed. I think this was a club record deal, and I think there's a lot of fascination in it. And I think I was speaking to Manchester United a lot last week because we understood that Kia Jurabchin was involved, and the minute you mention his name, that sets off all kinds of alarms and all sorts of, shall we say, concerns. And I think United on this one felt that, look, there's a interesting sort of story behind it, and it's fascinating for us to hear this detail. And I think they hope that it just shows how they handle it, and that they think how they got a coup of a top player. That obviously can be argued all day long as to whether he's the right signing for the right price. But I think, you know, rather than have all that sort of murk do the rounds of did Kia Jurabchin do it, didn't he, who was paid for what, you know, what went on, they thought let's just be pretty transparent about what exactly happened. I think given the morale is at, well, it's lowest for a decade. I think given that Moyes needs help, I think given that there are questions over every aspect at United, from Woodward's competence down to the manager's competence, I think it's a price that they were happy to pay, taking all that into account. I mean, my bigger issue is just how it's going to work on the pitch. I mean, yeah, when Van Persie is back, Rooney's number 10. Mata has played left and right for Chelsea. He can do that again, but just quite whether how and whether he fits into their system. I think he'll be a good player for them, but whether he'll be better than that, I think we'll have to be seen. I think, but whether that's cost them an extra 5 or 10 million euros, I don't think they've spent any time worrying about, given that. Just what a boost to morale it is at a particularly delicate time of the season.
Alison, yeah, I want to ask you about this because, I mean, I think Matt alluded to it there. I mean, Matt, of course, can play wide. He's done it for Spain. But generally, when he's played wide, he's done it on a team that was based on possession and short passing. And, you know, we saw a little bit of the way Rafa Benitez played and so on at Chelsea. Moyes has never played that way. Mourinho doesn't play that way. Generally, the system calls for harder working wingers. That's why we've seen so much of Young and Valencia. So what do you make of this? Because it seems to me that they either need to change their philosophy a little bit, or Moyes needs to change his philosophy a little bit, or they'll need to change the system, go 4-3-1-2 or a Christmas tree or whatever, if they ever want to accommodate that front three of Van Persie, Mata, and Rooney.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the issue. Do they, in the short term, build a team around one Mata, which for obvious reasons would be fraught with difficulty? I doubt Moyes is going to be able to bring in enough new players to create a whole new philosophy and style of playing during this transfer window.
You can just coach the players you have differently. So you don't need to bring in a whole bunch of this.
Well,
is what
you've got what you've got. You stick one matter in. I would think the simplest solution is to assume that one of Van Persie and Rooney are going to be out of the team for, you know, intermittent chunks of the season. You know, how often are they both going to be fully fit? And so you've got one Mata playing behind one of them. That's the short term.
You can't hope on them, one of them being injured. Please, let's try to get an injury from Rooney.
So I don't have to make a tough decision?
That is the short
okay,
term solution.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think this goes back to the same thing. We all really like David Moyes. I probably like him more than all of you. But everything you people say makes the guy seem like he doesn't know what he's doing. I mean,
he bought the opportunity. He didn't buy the players he needed. There's far more players they need in that team than someone like Mata with Mata's profile. And like you said, where is he going to play? The best thing would probably be that Christmas tree with him and Rooney behind Van Persie.
But then you don't have wingers, right?
And you don't have three proper three defensive midfielders that you could play behind them as well. So
that's the absurdity of this. This is the point. If you go 4-3-1-2 or you go Christmas tree, right? You need three central midfielders for it. What is United's biggest weakness? Central midfield. On top of that, they have about a billion wingers on this team, right? Zaha, who's probably going to move, and Young, and Valencia, and Yanezai, and Nani, and Kagawa, who now has to be a winger because there'll be no space for him in the hole. What the hell are you going to do with those guys, right?
Yeah, well, I think that's...
Did they answer any of these questions?
I think that's probably the biggest question mark about Moyes.
They said, when Matt asked, look at the helicopter, look at the helicopter.
Yeah. none of us actually can see the team he's working to. I mean, that is the one advantage of... I mean, we might not like the Mourinho blueprint. It's clearly not to everyone's taste, but yeah, there's no doubt, not even the slightest smidgen of doubt, of of the blueprint, that, you know, the template of team he wants. And with Moyes, that's not to say he doesn't have one, but we can't see it at the moment. We can't, you know, we can't even glimpse it through the fog at the moment. And that's, you know, that's part of his challenge, isn't it? Is to actually somehow from this. And I don't think we'll even see it, well, for another 6 months, because obviously they're scouting. Yeah, they swarmed all over La Liga a few weekends ago. This weekend it was the Bundesliga, looking at, you know, many, many more targets. We're talking about another 4 or 5, you know, proper first-team signings. At the moment, we can't even begin to envisage what the Man United starting 11 is going to look like next August.
Now, there's lots of stories in the paper today about, and I guess this is also part of Manchester United's glasnost here, not only is Wayne Rooney going to get a new contract, one which could pay him, you know, as much as 300 grand a week, which sounds like a lot of money. In fact, it's a pittance compared to what Lionel Messi earns. But hey, that's another issue. But this idea that they have involved Wayne Rooney a little bit in their transfer strategy. They've told them, look, we're thinking of signing this guy. What do you think? We're going to sign the other guy. And they made it seem as if this is some kind of revolutionary thing. Am I stupid, Dicko, for thinking that you're a freaking idiot of a football club if you don't do this?
Well, if you sign, if you get
if you don't involve your star players in contract negotiations, and you tell them what your plans are for the club.
Oh well, no, well exactly. No, I think it's. I think the point being made is more the fact that this is, you know, how much has changed in the relationship between Rooney and United in the last 6 months. As I say, with, you know, they're specifically in 2010 when Rooney kicked off. And he did it ham-fistedly, there's no two ways about it, but, you know, he went to see Ferguson then and asked why he hadn't gone for Ozil when he was moving that time, and Ferguson was explicit then that, you know, that was none of the player's business, and obviously six months ago, the last thing that Ferguson was doing was sitting down with Rooney saying, you know, look, stop sulking. We've got some big, you know, we've got some big plans. And I think in any sensible relationship, of course, a club sits down and explains to their player in any sensible relationship. But I think it's more to say the point was being made was that here's a guy who's gone from sort of outcast to a guy who, you know, is being encouraged to feel that he is, you know, as important to that club as any player ever was.
There's a big difference between saying to a star player and reassuring them that you are going to spend money and make the team better, and sitting down with that player and asking him what his views on the team, on who we should buy. They're completely different things, and the former is completely rational and normal. It's not
revolutionary. But the latter is not?
To ask a player who you should bring in?
Honestly? Why not? I mean, why would you not canvass opinion?
Think it through. Think it through.
Well, I don't know. This is a country that thinks that the minute you hang up your boots, you're qualified to coach in the Premier League and talk about football because you played it. But then somehow, when you're actually playing against these top players and these top defenders, you're not qualified to give an opinion.
No. You need a distance. The manager is the one that makes the cruel decisions. If you've got a teammate who's got the ear of. Some teammates have the ear of the manager and some don't.
Right,
that's bad, first of all.
Well, you're
secondly,
bad.
What if the rumour gets out that actually the manager and the player agree that a certain player should come in, and that sidelines another player who was very popular, and you get dressing room rifts. You have to have a clear divide between who makes those sorts of decisions. But there's nothing wrong at all with reassuring players who you want to keep and keep on side that you have plans and you're going to spend money. And,
but you
and
can't
bolster
tell them what those plans are.
You can't say to them, who do you think
I disagree with you so much, but I've said my part. Julian?
I get a bit of what Alison is saying. I think Robin van Persie would be delighted this morning reading the papers, knowing that now he earns none less than Wayne Rooney, but also he's not involved in transfer business, but Wayne Rooney is. And Wayne Rooney would probably be captain as well and not Robin van Persie. And I'm sure Robin would be delighted with that. I mean, I think a lot of big clubs do ask their big players, their captain, what they think about certain players. It's definitely the case, for example, at PSG now, where Ibrahimovic and Thiago Silva are asked by the owner and the chairman what they think of this player or that player, what about bringing him in. So I think this is something normal, at least on the continent, maybe not as much in England. And I think big clubs should do it, should have that kind of conversation and discussions with key players in the dressing room.
I think you'll find Patrick.
He marched into Arsene Wenger's office with a list of players, didn't he?
Yeah, he had a. That was a bit too much, maybe. But just like, listen, why about those? But I think I don't see any issue in that.
Dicko, just to wrap this up, we now there's suggestions. The figure we see quoted in the papers is that they have £150 million to spend. I'm assuming that that is a net spend. Does that match your information, A? And B, does that include the £37 million spent on Mata?
Well, they're talking about, you know, four or five sort of first-team ready guys. So in terms of exactly how that budget's going to play out, I don't think any of us can guess the moment, because, again, I think a lot of it will be to do with opportunity. I mean, the fact is that we know that, you know, 2 days, you know, 3 days before the window closed in August, Manchester United were ringing up Spurs saying, you know, has Bale definitely gone?
These things. We like David Moyes. You can't say these things.
If they were, you know, well, it wasn't Moyes making the calls, yeah, but, you know, they were saying, look, if Madrid are going to pay 85, we'll pay 105.
I mean, I really don't want to believe that.
I'm afraid.
You're hurting me inside.
I didn't want to believe it, but someone went into a worrying amount of detail on exactly what happened in those conversations, and it's... So the fact is, United were willing to break the world transfer fee for Bale. So that the fact is, they've got money, and they've got a sense, I think, that they do not, going back to that Moyes issue, they don't want him to sink, and they almost feel like they can't afford for him to sink, and they will spend what they feel is the money to sort of stabilise everything, and that is going to be probably 150 million quid, isn't it? And even when you say net spend, I have to say I'm not sure what they're going to get in for anyone they're trying to offload. So well,
they could just sell everybody to Steve Bruce, right?
I think they're going to be the Glazers are going to have to fund this one.
Yeah, but what's going to happen to all those players who are not good enough? Clearly, well, some of them are out of contract.
Also, those young
squad.
Players. Yeah. I mean, all right. Leaving aside the people like Nani, who for some reason, and I'm sure they didn't tell you because there is no reason, was given that enormous contract extension in September, and then Moyes decides he doesn't like him. But all these guys, Smalling and Cleverley and Kagawa and Phil Jones,
yeah.
These aren't bad players. Yeah. There's players who can develop, right?
But you go through all those. Phil Jones. They still see long-term as a first-team centre-half. Smalling certainly is, they see as a first-team defender. I mean, they need to see improvement in both of those and consistency in both of those. But they see them both be a first-team.
So they're safe, yeah?
Kagawa, they think they can get money back for. They're obviously Mata's Champions League cup tied, isn't he? So they're going to have to. They'll probably end up using him on and off the rest of the season, but I wouldn't be surprised if they then try and sell him. I think Cleverley probably is squad level for United. He's the type of guy who probably stick around a few years. And
so they're not selling anybody, except for, they're going to try to sell Kagawa.
You used to mention Nani. I mean, there's
well, who's going to buy Nani with that monster deal they signed, and if the guy never plays, what are you going to get for him?
Well, they're going to have to...
it's like selling Bebe.
Ed Wood was going to have to prove his selling genius.
All right, enough of that. Time now for some quick hits, and oh, look... Maguire, who of course replaced Skinner after he went into rehab, asked me to remind you all that the answers must be kept to 25 seconds. Otherwise, I'll start making loud, obnoxious noises and shout over you. Everton pummels something called Stevenage to advance to the fifth round of the FA Cup, but Brian Oviedo suffers a nasty leg break. Alison, you've been in this business a while. Can you give us an uplifting story of someone you've interviewed returning from a long injury?
It's quite hard to think of people who haven't been injured. I mean, that it sort of goes with it and makes you a better sports person for it. I would say to Brian Oviedo, first of all, you're 23, you will recover, probably not for the World Cup, but don't worry, there's still a lot of your career left. I would say, if you want to read pieces by me, read the piece that I wrote about Shelley Woods, who fell out of a tree when she was aged 11 and broke her back, and now she competes in a wheelchair in the marathon. Or Fabrice Muamba, who was technically dead and came back. I mean, it can be worse. That's what I'd say.
Chelsea versus Manchester City and Arsenal versus Liverpool are two of the plum ties in the next round. Dicko, is this good for the FA Cup, or would it be better for the competition if the big boys clashed later on?
Well, it's not a question of if it's better. I mean, it is what it is. It's called a draw. It's happening. These are great games. Let's get on with those and enjoy them and worry about the rest later. I mean, the fact is, the FA Cup's biggest problem is the middling clubs who don't care less. As long as the big clubs still try and win it, which they do, there's always normally a big club in the final, then the old thing will be fine.
Arsenal win against Coventry and at one point play no fewer than five Germans. Julian, would you rather discuss the implications of the one-time French team turning Teutonic, or you can comment on Gary Jacobs' report that Johan Gourcuff could be in Arsene Wenger's crosshairs?
Well, we've shared the Alsace with the Germans for a long time, so we can share a bit of the Arsenal. It's no problem.
And Wenger is, of course, German.
Half German, half French, we would say. And I would love Johan Gourcuff to come to Arsenal. Unfortunately, I don't think that would ever happen.
Well, what's this thing? Sorry, Draxler, Gourcuff. I thought they have don't they have enough sort of like a feet attacking?
No, but it's a new formation. You play in
the 4-10-1?
2-7 attacking midfielder and one up front.
Osvaldo, or the Wizard of Oz, as some of us like to call him, got himself suspended by Southampton for beating up a teammate in training. Allison, is this just a case of boys will be boys and news leaking out and this kind of stuff happens all the time? And if Katerina rang you up and says, hey, Big Nick is gone, I need you to advise me on this, how would you handle it?
I think Osvaldo's on his way out. To be honest, he's never really fitted in anyway. He scored one wonder goal and otherwise has been a disappointment considering he's the record club signing. There are enough clubs out there desperate for a striker. I think they will be able to offload him. And the feeling, I was there on Saturday, and the feeling is, and players were actually saying this in a way, they were saying, if there's someone who's not buying into our excellent camaraderie that we have here, then he's not welcome.
Now, there we were thinking that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer only signs guys represented by his mate Jim Solbakken. And presto, he tricks us with a triple swoop for three guys, none of whom have anything to do with Jim Solbakken. Kenwyn Jones, Wilfried Zaha on loan, and Fabio. All three are either doing their medicals or have done their medicals. Dicko, which of these three is going to help out most?
I don't know if it's going to help the most, but I'm most intrigued to see, obviously, how Zaha gets on, as you say, on loan. Here's another young English player who's sort of almost feels like his career's got ahead of himself. He's certainly got ahead of his own career in terms of, shall we, confidence. He's already a rich man. He's got more cars than he's probably made Man United appearances. And now we just basically need to see him play a settled run in the top league and prove that there's something there. Basically, he's had a frustrating time, but I'll be fascinated to see whether he has got the attitude necessary.
Newcastle reportedly turned down a £14 million bid from Paris Saint-Germain for Johan Cabaye. The two apparently want £25 million. Julian, are they going to get it from PSG? And are PSG can actually bid again? Because there's some dispute about that.
Well, I think Mike Ashley is hoping for another Andy Carroll sort of deal, which, you know, he's not going to get because PSG are not Liverpool. I mean, at least the Liverpool of the time. And they don't think that Johan Cabaye is worth that much, to be fair. So they might not come back at all for him and just don't make another offer.
Gab, question for you. I'm still waiting for anyone to approach me with money for my children, but maybe you can explain Neymar to Barcelona. What's going on? Going on with that deal?
Okay, so this is a case of a guy who had greatness written all over him from the age of sort of 17. And so there was a whole bunch of people who went and took shares in the players as third-party owners. Those shares were then traded. Some of them were bought back by his dad. Eventually, when he signed for Barcelona, he moved for 57 million euros. 40 million of that went to his dad, who kept some of it because he owned a share in his own son, and some of it he paid out to other people who owned shares in his son. 17 million went to Santos. This then became a whole issue because in reality there was a whole bunch of other auxiliary fees linked into this, including the fact that Neymar's dad is getting 2 million euros a year to scout for the next 5 years. That he's getting $4 million as Neymar's commercial agent. That Santos have entered a collaboration whereby they get 7.9 million euros over 5 years from Barcelona. It's not really clear to do what. Basically, the whole cost of the operation looks to be something like 86 million euros, which is around about 77, 78 million pounds. What does appear certain is this is one of the top three transfers of all time. That is all we have time for today. Thank you to my guests, Allison Rudd, Julian Lorenz, and Matt Dickinson. It was a pleasure to have them all on board. And you can show your love to them on Twitter. They like it very much, and they respond to each and every one of you individually. A quick reminder that we're going to be back on the road again. That's right, February 6th, Manchester, at the Football Museum. Dicko, you ever been to the Football Museum?
Went to it in his Preston, guys, and a very enjoyable time I had to. And I keep telling myself I've got to go to it now it's in Manchester. And maybe this is my big chance.
It would be fantastic if you could join us. Tickets cost £5 for Times Plus members, £7.50 for non-members. To book, you can visit www.ctickets.com/thetimes, or better yet, call 0871-620-4025. Hopefully, we'll be able to see you all in Manchester on the 6th of February at the Football Museum. In any case, if you can't make it, or even if you can, don't worry. We're all going to be back next week. Bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.